He's mugging the poor man.
Hello, welcome to part two in the specials. Bailey, it's been so long since I've seen you.
I know, it must have been in what, 2 minutes?
Well, for the purpose of the podcast, it's been about 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks, okay. Yeah.
Nice to see you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, James. How are you doing?
I'm good since I last spoke to you.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
So now we're coming up to part two of our specials, the interviews, I think.
The interview years.
The interviews. It's like a really in-depth Sky Arts documentary. It's not. It's just us two. Obviously, just me and Bailey here because Tom and Ed are very busy. We're very busy as well, but we've managed to squeeze it into our schedule.
We've got a cup of tea. I'm basically on my lunch hour.
Yeah, we've had a bit of carrot cake, had a cup of tea. Albert's whinging out the back.
Same old, really.
First up, we got Andrea Bernard, and that was a real pleasure to get her on. She was lovely, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was
classy. She told some really interesting stories about her time. She's only in a couple of episodes, wasn't she? But it is, I find, Bailey, that it is the minor characters in it that really make the series. People still know Nervous Neris.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, she's appeared at several of the conventions, hasn't she?
Nervous Neris, obviously, in that unforgettable scene with Rodney when he's trying to take her on a date to impress her, and Jevin and Mickey Pierce.
There was a fantastic piece of information she fed us during that interview. Can you remember what it was?
That it was filmed on the truck.
No, about who,
that was as well.
Who she auditioned for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so she...
We won't say because it might ruin the interview for people who've not heard it. Or yeah. We can say.
Well, listen up now and you'll find out. Ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to be joined by Andrea Bernard, a.k.a. Nervous Neris. Good evening, Andre. How are you? Happy New Year to you.
I'm great. Thank you very much for asking.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's really, really kind of you to give up your Sunday evening.
Not a problem. I'm honoured to be asked.
Okay, so we've got some questions for you.
Well, the first question that's on the tip of all of our tongues, I think, is how did you come to get the part of Nervous Neris and be part of the Only Fools and Horses cast?
It's very interesting and kind of random because I was very young. And it was actually my first kind of what we term big TV job. And it just involved another audition going to BBC TV Centre, as it was then, in Wood Lane.
Okay.
And meeting John Sullivan.
Yeah.
And the team and everything. And funnily enough, I was actually reading for Gwyneth Strong's part.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Did not know that.
So that was the script that I went in and read. And John Sullivan was so sweet, he looked at me and he went, "Do you know what, love? You're not right for that, but I've got something absolutely cracking, hang on a minute." And he literally went into his briefcase and he pulled out this script and he said, "Just to go anywhere?" I was like, "No, that's fine. Pop out, get a cup of tea and read this through." And literally, I was put in another little office and there was this part, Nervous Neris. I sat there for half an hour, looked at it, came back in, read the part, they went, "Brilliant." And that was it. It was all in one day.
Is that well known then, that bit of trivia? Because I've never heard that before. But you
know. No, it's not. That's a special one for you guys.
That's exclusive for the podcast.
Exclusive, thank you.
That is really interesting. Hi, Andre. I'm Bailey. Thank you so much for giving up your time. So the next question is, we all know you as Nervous Neris and you're a real life action hero with the stunts which were involved in the episode dates. How dangerous was it, or was it just clever editing?
It was clever editing. What it actually involved, from our point of view, as I'm sure you guys know, all of that location stuff was shot in Bristol.
Yeah. Yep. close to us.
We'd be doing all the rehearsals in London at the Action Rehearsal Studios that don't actually exist anymore. I think they've become luxury flats.
Sadly, yeah.
Yeah. And then all the location stuff was shot before up in Bristol. And that particular scene and most of those driving scenes in the car, we were on a low loader.
Okay.
Would you guys know what that is?
It's
like a low forklift.
Yeah, low truck, yeah.
With the three-wheel van on the back.
So oh,
we
wow.
would literally, we were driving around for hours around these Bristol streets doing various scenes. And causing quite a bit of attention, as I'm sure you can imagine. So as we would start, you know, early in the morning, there'd be no one out on the streets, and word spread pretty quickly, and this is, you know, pre-mobile phones and Twitter and everything, but just by word of mouth, people started turning up and trying to get into shots.
Oh, I bet. Like,
yeah.
I would have been one of those people trying to get into shots.
Yeah. Me too, probably.
So it was all kind of around what were pretty quiet residential streets in Bristol. The actual, the shot that I'm sure you're thinking of, where three-wheel van leads the road.
That's the one.
Yeah, okay, they were stunt doubles. So that one shot.
I would have lied and said it, I said that was you in the car.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I think it was more to do with insurance for Nick.
Yeah, of course,
But literally just that one shot, everything else we were doing, but that one shot, and I think it was more to do with the stability of the car.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, wonky, you could have two injured actors. So that was stunt doubles, but the rest of it was us in the car, but we were on the back of a low loader.
Fantastic. And the next question is, have you got any other inside information about your experiences working on the show that fans out there might not know about?
Well, I'm sure your fans probably know more about this show than I do. I mean, from my point of view, it was possibly still one of the most exciting jobs I've ever done because it was so early in my career. So
yeah.
The idea of turning up at those rehearsal studios in East Acton, where you had the two Ronnies on the top floor, various game shows, like each floor had a different production going on.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, the house floor where we were. And it was like kids at playtime. John Sullivan was always the first one in and always seemed to be the last one to go and laughed the whole time.
Yeah,
there
really.
There was just laughter the whole time. So the things, just sitting there and watching David Jason, you know, John Challis, who to this day I adore, and hilarious. Just rehearsing and trying the gags and going over and over and over, and John Sullivan just laughing all the time. Hugely, hugely fun experience. And then that surreal thing where at lunchtime you'd all go up to the canteen, which at that point was kind of on the top floor.
Yeah.
And there would be the great and the good from those halcyon days of the BBC in a queue at the canteen. Mm. So you'd get, you know, everybody from Ronnie Barker, Bruce Forsyth, whatever drama was in there, sort of in a queue for your beef stew or whatever. It was kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
And of course I thought, oh gosh, all TV jobs are like this.
Yeah.
They weren't.
No.
So that sounds like a really amazing time.
Did you ever think that 30 years later you'd still get asked about it and still be going to conventions
and
have Wallies like us call you up?
That's actually the incredibly cool thing, to be part of something that was such a joy for me at the time, but now has, it seems to be, it's not just had one rebirth, it's had so many rebirths now. And the fact that now people are showing their grandkids this show, and the beautiful thing about Netflix and streaming services and everything, that everybody can see it.
Yeah.
It's got a whole new audience, but it keeps on getting one.
That's right.
So it has this life that kind of goes beyond it. As I said, from my point of view, I just got this great job at the BBC that I was hugely excited about, and I was learning the ropes, and I was fortunate enough to learn it from some pretty darn talented guys, which was amazing.
I have to ask, although it's 30 years ago, do you often get stopped and people ask you, are you nervous, Neris? Because we have to say, you haven't aged in that 30 years from our perspective.
I think, funnily enough, it's that thing of, I think it's more to do with the voice. Because when people, everybody seems to know Nervous Neris, which is just brilliant. But the minute that I would say, oh, it's a bit smelly.
Brilliant.
Quite brilliant.
You've not lost it. You've still got it.
I wonder what she would be doing now. What do you think?
I don't
care. I don't care. Anyway.
I wonder if she's running that cast that her mum worked in.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I'd like to think she's still around.
It would be nice to think.
Do you remember your character's surname on the show? Because it is mentioned.
Hughes.
Sorry?
Was it Hughes?
It wasn't Hughes. How do you know? What?
I think, because when Rodney leaves the calf and your mother, so to speak, challenges him, I'm sure he says, "Oh, hi, Mrs. Sampson. Sorry about that."
I would never have known that.
Well, okay. Something new every day. Listen to this podcast.
I'm leaving with something. That's brilliant.
Nera Sampson. There we are.
That's so funny. I can tell you one more funny little thing.
Go for it, please. Go
for it. Which is going back to the rehearsals in action. You must know that David Jason is a motorbike freak. I mean, absolutely loves his... Did you know that?
I didn't personally know. Did you know that?
Yeah, he did. He was kind of... He really was into Nortons and, like, really...
Oh, wow. Bike. Okay.
And at that point, I had a provisional motorbike license. So oh, I right. would actually bike to rehearsals. So I was that person. And he actually let me drive
his
bike around the car park of the rehearsals.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because I think at that point, I was... possibly the only actress in British Equity who drove.
That is a really cool story to have.
Yeah.
I think he found it quite cool.
That's
amazing.
In the episode Sickness and Wealth, obviously there's the scene where they're holding a seance.
Yes.
And obviously you famously come in and shout, "Lager's off!"
Yeah.
Were you behind that door giggling, listening to that scene and just...
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, completely. One of the hardest things on that show, remembering that this is going back to the times when you would record in front of a live audience as live.
Yeah.
So you do your pre-records, you rehearse all week, you go in and, so, you know, rehearsals Monday to Thursday, go into BBC Centre on Friday, and then I think we had the sachet off, and then the studio audience came in on the Sunday. And one of the biggest problems for everybody was the fact that the audience were genuinely uproariously laughing, as were we, off camera. And one of the things that, I mean, John Challis was always trying to catch my eye and, and make me giggle. So I would be that person kind of standing looking at my shoes, trying not to laugh.
Don't make eye contact. Yeah,
it was... I'm smiling relaying this to you.
Oh,
it genuinely is such a lovely time to think back on. How lucky was I?
I mean, series 6 is one of the best series, I think, for me.
Yeah,
and
I
you
think
came in at a great time.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly gets repeated a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think it's certainly one of the most repeated series from what I can gather.
Mm.
I'm just proud to have been part of it.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of a wonderful sort of informal club of actors who've done it. Mm. It's like having your Blue Peter badge for British comedy or something, you know.
Yeah.
The little connections on Twitter and whatever, but it's terribly lovely to have been part of something that became, that was at the time so brilliant and has become so loved.
Yeah, we talked to Daniel Hill a few weeks ago and he says the same, you know, just have even like a relatively small role in it, but you still are sort of part of the family, aren't you? And...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's something that doesn't happen very often.
No,
especially in this day and age, that's the irony, because there's so much content out there now.
Yeah.
The fact that something, as you said, that is 30 years old, is arguably sometimes getting more viewing figures than it did at the time.
Yeah.
Even though I think the Christmas special that I was in, I think it got more viewers than the Queen's Speech.
Really?
Was something,
that's incredible.
I don't know how truthful that is, but...
Well, it's probably, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
We believe you.
Yeah, it was something like 26 point something million.
That's amazing.
Who was the last...
I know.
Who was the last person you kept in touch with from the show?
Probably the last person I had any contact with was John Challis.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's the last person.
And we have to tell you, we put it out to our fans on social media and we asked them to vote for their favourite barmaid of Only Fools and Horses. And we had over 400 votes and we have to tell you, you ran away with it. You had 67% of the votes.
Oh my goodness me!
So you are officially...
Oh, thank you so much.
You are officially the fans' favourite.
I feel like I'd like to put that on my CV. Or
absolutely.
I think you should, absolutely.
Well, thank you to the people who took the time to vote. How brilliant.
And thank you so much once again for joining us
this
evening.
Yeah, thanks very much for your time.
It's a pleasure talking to you guys, and whatever time this goes out, but a happy new year to everybody.
Thank you very much, Andre.
Very lovely.
All the best for 2019. Thank you.
And you. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
It'd be interesting to know what you listeners think about if Andre Bernard did take the part of Cassandra. Do you think that it would have worked, or do you think that we were better off with Gwyneth Strong?
I think I can't imagine anyone else. Like, I think Ed said a couple of times in there, goes, you can't imagine anyone else playing Boise. You just can't. They're real people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're just all like, such iconic characters, aren't they, and actors, and we just know them for who they are.
Absolutely. Leads us on to our next interview, which was Daniel Hill.
The lovely Daniel Hill.
What a nice man. Ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to be joined by Daniel Hill, who played Stephen for a couple of episodes in Only Fools and Horses and the Jolly Boys Outing.
Hello.
Hello, Daniel. This is James. How are you?
All right, James. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm here with Tom, Ed and Bailey.
Hi, Daniel. Nice to meet you.
Ed. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Bailey.
Hi, Daniel.
Thank you so much for coming on our podcast. That's really kind of you.
It's my absolute
pleasure. Thank you very much. Sunday.
How were you approached for the show? Was it through your wife, or did John Sullivan come and watch you in a production or something?
Yeah, because I've been on Olivia, but my wife, was the production manager on the film that preceded the Jolly Boys Outing, the one that was set in the Opera House, and also went down to the country and was in the mansion. And I was offered a part in that one, but sadly I couldn't do it because I was doing another show. And I thought, that's it, I won't get offered another one. You know, they'll find better people. They won't go to me. Anyway, we were on holiday with our eldest daughter, Natasha, over in France. And at that time, there were no sort of mobile phones around. Nothing. And my agent had said, look, I need to be able to contact you. And I said, no, you won't. You won't need to. I'm going to be in this place in France, which is, you can't get hold of me. So yeah, it's no point. There's no point. And then somehow, I don't know how she did it, but she got the number of the place where we were staying. Oh, and this lady who used to work for Tony Blair and who'd been his PA said, your agent's on the phone.
And oh, wow.
Said, what? And she said, I got on the phone, and lovely Joy said to me, look, the Only Fools want you to do this Christmas episode, and but they won't do it. They don't want you to say yes until they've read the scenes to you over the phone. And I said, they don't need to do that. I'll do it. And they said, they will not do it until they've read them to you. So they then rang me up again in the house in France, and and lovely chap who is the production manager on that show was a chap called Ollie, who was delightful, and Tony Dow, who directed it, was standing next to it. And Ollie read the actual whole of the scene with the Trivial Pursuit over the phone, about 20 minutes worth. And I couldn't stop laughing.
We have the same reaction now.
He's laughing. I said, stop. I'll do it. And he said, no, we're going to read the whole thing.
Daniel?
It really was. It was just, it was extraordinary. And so I then flew back to England with Olivia and Natasha. And we came back. I had a costume fitting. We did a bit of rehearsal. We then shot the first bit. And I then flew back to France. And then we stayed for the rest of the week. And then we flew back again. And then we shot the end. And then we did the final studio. But I can't tell you. When we actually did the Trivial Pursuit scene, I can see it now. I can see myself. We did all of Nick and David's stuff in the morning and everybody else. And in the afternoon, after we'd had lunch at Television Centre, they put up the set behind me, and then Nick and David were obviously off the hook. Then they could do anything they wanted because they knew they'd done their stuff.
Yeah.
And I then did a sort of close-up shot with the lovely girl that played my wife, and I sat there, and as I was doing the lines, Nick and David especially, was guffawing all the way through. About 20 minutes of them absolutely sort of chewing rags and going and crying when with laughter. So which was lovely. I had to get through it.
Yeah, of course.
Just as we were coming to near the end of the actual recording, about 20 minutes, I noticed that at the corner of my eye that Gareth Gwendolyn, who was the exec producer, also was standing by the camera, which is really off-putting because he was also head of comedy. And I thought, just carry on, Dan. Just carry on. Don't stop. Carry on. And so I was there, and I said, look, you know, and I was saying something about, I'm not a yuppie, you know, but all that stuff. And he says, and I could see Gareth was pulling a handkerchief out of his breast pocket. And he got the handkerchief, and he had tears running down his eye, and he shoved the handkerchief into his mouth.
That's amazing.
Laughing out loud. And so, and again, all that was going on while I was doing the scene.
Amazing.
All the way through. And they said, all right, that's cut. We're just going to check it through. And wow. Gareth said to me, that was very, very funny.
It was very good.
Hilarious scene.
It's
so hard not to laugh.
Absolutely, absolute gentleman. Really, really nice.
I think we could have spent all night on the phone talking to Daniel about Only Fools and Horses, and he enjoyed telling it as much as we enjoyed listening.
It is nice because there's almost a part of you where, for me anyway, I don't know, you feel embarrassed to sort of, if you saw, like we said, if we saw Trigger or Roger Lloyd Pack walking down the street, you wouldn't want to go up to him and go, all right, Dave, you'd feel embarrassed. But it's almost like a blessing from Daniel Hill that he absolutely adores the time in Only Fools and Horses. And he's really, really happy that people still recognise him as the yuppie Stephen.
What was the highlight for me when Daniel was talking about his memories of being on the show? They were such happy memories, and he was so excited to tell them and to relive them in his mind. And similar to, I guess, what John Challis and Sue Holderness were saying, it's just one big family, and it must have been really, really sad when they all had to part ways at the end. But what a lovely, lovely way to be.
Absolutely. And you know, they still get together at conventions and things like that, which is amazing. And I think it's just part of something that just ties them all together. It's Only Fools and Horses binds them all together.
I think it's such a rare thing, though, because I think Daniel sort of touched on it a bit on his interview about the way the acting industry is going now. Mm. And I've known actors who offset don't speak to their co-workers, and it's all very awkward and all very highly strung. But it seems back when Only Fools and Horses was in its prime, when all these lovely actors were working together, they really got on very well and enjoy spending time with each other.
Absolutely. It seems to be universally respected, Only Fools and Horses, doesn't it?
From
people at the BBC to other directors and actors. Right, the industry. I think there are some jealous actors out there, people who wanted to be in there. Who, Bailey, if I ask you a question, who, if we could interview one person who, not the obvious one, like Del Boy, but who would it be?
From Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah. For me, it's got to be Jim Broadbent. I'd love to interview Jim Broadbent, AKA Slater.
I think Jim would be a fantastic actor to have on the show, but for selfish reasons.
I know you're going to say. Not little legs.
Yeah. So Baz Blackwood, I'd love to have on here, and I'd like to pick his brain about his character, Lennox Gilbey, in The Longest Night, just to find out some behind the
bizarre
scenes.
Like,
I don't know why I'm so infatuated with it.
You've got the Lennox Gilbey. How many followers has that got?
I don't know, about 8,000, or maybe more. I can't remember. I've not checked for a while.
It just goes to show with Only Fools and Horses. Like, one character who's appeared in one episode, you know, 30 years ago, 1989, wasn't it?
Yeah.
30 years ago, and there's 8,000 followers on Twitter to this character. This, the Vaz has played many roles, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. He's done lots of voiceover work recently. I've heard him.
Yeah, he's a busy actor. He's done all sorts of stuff. He's very successful in his career, but I don't know. I think it's the same for a lot of actors. There's always one role that defines the actor. Not saying that Lennox Gilbey defined Vaz, but for me,
we'll have to wait.
Sorry to hear that. So yeah, Vaz Blackwood, I'd love to have on the show. So if you're listening, Vaz, feel free to get in touch with us, because we'd be more than happy to have a chat.
Absolutely, get in touch. And equally, I mean, I highly doubt Jim Broadbent's listening, but if he is, get in touch, Jim.
If any of you listeners out there would like to be a part of the podcast by either calling in for a chat, in talking about your favourite episode or characters of the popular sitcom Only Fools and Horses, or even be a part of our quiz, which is always good fun, isn't it, James?
Absolutely. Just join us, you know, have a chat, give us a call.
We love to hear from the OFA community. You know, you're the people that keep us going, and you're the reason why we enjoy doing these podcasts. So you can contact us by email at theofapodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is @OFA_podcasts. We're also on Instagram, which is
Only Fools and Horses, but there's lots of underscores in there as well.
You'll find it. Just type in Only Fools and Horses. Sorry, Ed. It's Ed's part normally to say that, but he's not here.
I'll get him on the blower if you want.
We're also on Facebook,
which
is a great place to find content about our new releases and other Only Fools and Horses facts. So if you just go onto Facebook and type in the search bar, the Jolly Boys Podcast, please give our page a like.
I personally enjoyed the interview so far. And like we alluded to in the last podcast, we have got plenty more to come. We've got lining up interviews all the time. And we're looking forward to taking this on into series two. Maybe we can look at doing some more specials to break up so we don't cross room. So with some like character episodes or something like that.
We had a really good suggestion from someone who follows us on Twitter. They sent me a tweet saying, what are we going to do for Valentine's Day? Are we going to do some sort of special for that? And of course, there's quite a few Only Fools and Horses episodes that are loved themed. So maybe we could release a new podcast.
Well, that's going to be a bit tight because it's currently the 8th of February. Valentine's Day is in 6 days' time.
Maybe we could release one when we're together on the 10th of March.
We could do a belated Valentine's Day theme. And we'll
yeah, well.
We'll just record some specials and we'll do it. I think we still got to do a bloody Christmas episode yet, haven't we? That's going to be in March.
Yeah.
But we'll have I'll bring the turkey round.
Yeah, and I'll
take the giblets out.
I'll bring the crackers.
And then we'll go out clubbing afterwards. Anyway, thanks for listening. I axe.
Yo!
We got some half price crack dice, some Mazza carpet tiles, TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LP, pool games, gold chains, what's the name, the ladder push, some Trevor Brooks, the trap shoots from a mushy shepherd's bush.
Strangling a cat.
Episode 3.
Fuck off.
Start again. I'm sorry.
Let me finish and then talk.
Otherwise,
it's
a nightmare. The cat.
Okay, sorry.
3, 2, 1.
You can cut it.
Ah. This is harder this time. We've done one now. 3, 2, 1.
It's me, Lennox Gilbey.